In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
It's time to pass the popcorn. Let's brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, and the Bangor Drive-In. Alan Adams of The Main Edge joining us here in studio this afternoon to talk movies. El Guapo. Welcome.
I'm glad you guys are enjoying this.
The handsome one is here with us to talk movies. And, I saw Captain Underpants.
Right.
Took the boy, his first movie.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And he made it most of the way through.
Yeah, no, I imagine. He's still a little guy, so that's tough, especially when you're, when you're doing something like that and it's not your house and you can't kind of just sort of check out for a minute or two here and there. So,
as I told Kerry, he talked less than most people who were there.
Oh, well, good for him. It was
a very entertaining movie.
Right? It's juvenile, but in the right way, I think. Yeah. No, we certainly had a lot of fun.
But you got to see, a couple that are supposed to be a little scary and spooky, right?
Yeah, I did.
So the big question is, did either one deliver?
Yes. Okay. One delivered in a pretty serious way. The other one decidedly less so.
Okay. Which one will we talk about first?
Well, we'll start with the good one because it's always, we'll probably spend a little bit more time on the less good one.
I hope so.
But I went to see, it's a movie called It Comes at Night. It stars Joel Edgerton, written and directed by this guy, a young director by the name of Trey Edward Stultz, who only had like one previous feature credit to his name. But it's a movie that was distributed by the company A24, which is kind of making a name for itself in the last few years as kind of this sort of indie clearinghouse of high end stuff. A lot of high end genre fare. Like they distributed Ex Machina and The Witch from last year, and they're also the company that produced Moonlight, so it's like these guys have some serious cred going right now. But they've been kind of doing this thing where they're kind of almost cornering the market of these sort of high end and usually low budget kind of genre movies, into which It Comes at Night falls very firmly. It's this movie where some sort of undefined epidemic has struck. It's not ever very clear as to what the disease is, what causes it, how it spread, how it began, any of that stuff. So society has fractured in a very significant way, and survivors have kind of taken to the woods in an effort to keep themselves safe. They fled the urban areas and disappeared into these kind of rural compounds where people kind of keep to themselves. And that's where we come in. We meet this guy, played by Joel Edgerton, who's living with his family in this sort of this rambling kind of compound in the woods, where, it's like, you wear gloves and gas masks to go outside. Like everybody's armed to the teeth. There's no electricity. It's got that, all those sort of post-apocalyptic kind of signifiers without any sort of explanation as to the whys and wherefores. And a lot of times that ambiguity is kind of hurts a movie. Like there's this need, I think, inherent to, to the human animal to want sort of conclusions to our stories. We don't necessarily do well with sort of unpulled threads. But when that ambiguity is handled right, you can get something that's incredibly compelling that allows for even bigger scares involving what happens off screen as opposed to what you actually see. And that's where this movie comes in. It's just wonderfully constructed. And this guy lives there with his family. He's got a wife, 17-year-old son, and then someone tries to break in to their home. They kind of capture him and get his story. Turns out he was just trying to get, supplies to help his own family. And so despite having some misgivings, they kind of collect together. They bring this other family there to stay in their place, which initially works out well. You know, more hands, more eyes, the whole shebang. But when you're operating in a world where nobody really knows what's going on, trust is hard to come by. And so you get a lot of kind of, the sort of paranoid, you have this quiet paranoid thriller wrapped in this kind of end of the world, these end of the world trappings. And the end result is something that is incredibly compelling, despite the fact that I don't feel comfortable really sharing any kind of narrative details.
Sure.
Because again, they don't tell you a lot, but what they do tell you is so vital, and it comes at an important times in the story. And it's such a well-told, well-manufactured tale that is undeniably scary, despite the fact that there's none of the jump scares and the over-the-top gore that I think marks a certain type of horror movie these days. It's a much more cerebral offering in a way that, you just don't stop thinking about it.
That's the best kind.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so honestly, and Joel Edgerton is sneaky good, man. Like, he's one of those guys who is unfailingly excellent whenever I see him in anything. And it's just one of those things where it's, you just wonder if that breakout sort of moment is going to come for him, because he's done some great work in some smaller movies. Like, he was great in last year's Loving, which was a contender for some awards. But yeah, he's just an incredibly talented guy who does regular guy push to the edge by circumstance as well as anybody out there. And when you put that a guy with that talent in a movie like this, like, you get something that's really, really good. So if you're a fan it's a horror movie, but you almost don't want to call it that because that limits it in a lot of ways, describing it that way. It's just a good movie. And so if you're a fan of the genre, or if you're just a fan of quality filmmaking, like, It Comes at Night, you should really check it out.
That sounds great. I can't wait to see it now.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And perhaps better than the movie that some are calling the worst movie Tom Cruise has ever made.
Oh, The Mummy.
That's setting the bar high.
Yeah, like it's one of those things where, like, I get it. Like, I'm Universal Studios. I'm looking around and I'm seeing, like, all these interconnected intellectual property movies making $1 billion at a pop. It's like, I too would like an extended cinematic universe. They've got this backlog of old monster movies, so they've decided they're going to do they're calling it the Dark Universe, which is kind of a stupid name. But yeah, they're basically trying to create an interconnected cinematic universe featuring, like, all of these, like, characters from old monster movies. So they've got The Mummy, there's a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, The Invisible Man, there's going to be a Frankenstein and a Wolfman, probably a Dracula. Like, they're just going to bring all that stuff. And since this is the first one, it's basically just a big pile of exposition with a loosely wrapped narrative around it. Like, it's just not, like, there's not a lot going on in this movie.
There is some material there to be worked with. I mean, those are good characters that you could do something with. So,
oh, exactly. And I'll give you the rundown, because, I mean, it's just ridiculous. But so Tom Cruise plays this guy, Nick Denton, I believe his name is. And he's in the military, but he and his buddy, they have this side hustle where they basically liberate antiquities and sell them on the black market. So he's kind of a shady character. Him and his partner, Vale, played by New Girl's Jake Johnson, because, you know, yeah, you want that guy in your monster movie. But he inadvertently he steals this map from this girl that he picks up at a hotel. Who's a noted archaeologist, grabs the map, inadvertently stumbles on an enclave of Iraqi fighters because they're in Iraq.
Okay.
They inadvertently stumble upon this ancient Egyptian tomb, which is in Iraq, reasons that I'm not going to go into. The movie tells you, and it's about as dumb as you probably think it is, so I'm not going to go into it. but they find this tomb of this ancient Egyptian princess who this archaeologist and her team believes was erased from history deliberately. It turns out, you know, this princess was trying to bring to mortal form the Egyptian god of death Set, like okay. you do,
yeah.
And so they pull out the sarcophagus and they're going to take it to England for study. But then you know what happens? Like what always happens when you unearth a mummy? They're cursing happens.
Oh,
there
yes.
are curses.
But they don't want to be unearthed,
right? You know, it's like they're there for a reason.
Yeah.
And so the curses start to happen, and then it turns out that Tom Cruise is now the chosen, and so he's going to become the mortal vessel for the inestimable power of Seth, the god of death. And he's brought in along with the sarcophagus and the aforementioned archaeologist to some organization. They tell you the name, but I'll be honest, I forgot. That is devoted to the study and eradication of evil, run by one Dr. Henry Jekyll, played by Russell Crowe. And he is that Dr. Jekyll. We actually get a surprisingly fun glimpse of the whole Jekyll Hyde thing. But yeah, and then from there, it pretty much devolves into, you know, Tom Cruise running away from sand.
And, so he gets to run. That's
yeah,
important.
Oh, yeah, you know, he gets to run. He runs away from sand, fights, I don't know, undead. I don't know what you really call them. They're not really zombies, but, you know, the when the mummy comes back to life, she, like, takes like the essence of living humans, and then they turn into basically desiccated corpses that walk around and want to fight Tom Cruise. And yeah, and then you know, and then it comes down there's a final battle, and you know, and Tom Cruise has to decide, you know, it's what's worth more, his own life or the world's.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's huge.
Yeah,
I can side with her followers, though. I do want to run after and beat Tom Cruise. Yeah.
Are those Scientologists coming after him?
Now, here's the thing. Like, if you squint, you can kind of see, like, a good movie in here somewhere. It's just one of those things where it's just, they try to have it both ways. Like, they're trying to create this movie that's basically an expository kickoff to their grander cinematic universe. But they're also trying to make a Tom Cruise action movie.
Yeah.
And the reality is...
Mission Impossible Mummy.
That's solid. That is solid. But yeah, and so in an effort to do both of those things, to be all things to all people, they're not really successful at any of it. And so what you get is a movie that's so fractured and boring that even Tom Cruise, with his pathological need for people to love what he does, looks bored and disinterested as he goes through this movie. Like, even when he's running away from stuff, it's like you could just tell he's like, well, I guess I'm running away from this green screen or whatever. Like, say what you will about Tom Cruise, at least he's usually committed.
Yeah,
like he's
completely.
Usually, like he invests himself wholeheartedly, no matter how dumb the movie is. But apparently we found the line that Tom Cruise will not cross. The hill that Tom Cruise is going to die on is the mummy.
Wow.
Charlotte Wilder, I don't know if you saw her tweet about the mummy, described Tom Cruise as looking like a suburban mom. Not an actual one, but one from a 90s movie, a real stick in the mud who won't let her play baseball till he gets better grades. So, just completely out of place, out of movie.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, like, I genuinely hope that this movie doesn't torpedo the whole thing, because I would like to see where they go with it. And I hope, you know, if they learn the lessons that are, I think, fairly easily learned from the experience of making this movie, I think they have a chance of making something good. But the truth is, it's like, you know, and they've got some good names. I mean, they've got Russell Crowe. I know Johnny Depp is attached to one of these movies.
oh, no.
I've heard Javier Bardem's name come up with some of this stuff. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it's not like they're wanting for people, because again, like, everybody wants that franchise paycheck, and you can't blame them for wanting it. And, you know, and that's like, that's where the money is in Hollywood these days. Like, those are the two comma checks that you can get. So you can do, well, movies like It Comes at Night. You know what I mean? So I get it. I just hope that they figure out a way to strike that balance between grander story, like meta narrative, and the individual stories that are being told. Because if you don't have that balance, you don't really have a movie that can stand on its own two feet. And without that, you're just not going to make it work.
Alan Adams of The Main Edge talking movies with us on Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall, Cinema 10, and the Bangor Drive-In. Thank you, Alan.
Oh, my pleasure.